The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
This is Mike Consul. Thank you for joining us. The ranks of the aging, those considered senior citizens here in the United States and really around the world, are growing. And as we age comes physical and mental compromise and the need for some specialized housing and services. Senior housing such as nursing homes, memory care facilities, and assisted living and independent living developments seem to have been a relatively safe bet for investors. Then came the exogenous event that no investor could have possibly seen coming, the COVID-19 pandemic, which hit senior living properties harder than other venues. And things looked pretty dismal for a while. But senior housing developments have proved resilient and have been making a comeback. To discuss the sector, I'm joined by David Selznick. He's a partner and chief investment officer at KA Real Estate, an organization that invests in alternative real estate sectors such as medical office, off-campus student housing, self-storage, and of course, senior housing. As partner and CIO, he plays a leading role in KA Real Estate's acquisitions and dispositions and financings. And he's a Florida Gator, having graduated from the University of Florida. David Selznick, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Mike, for having us. The Gator part is one that, you know, my dad used to joke because I was there for undergrad law school, business school, and he was wondering if I was going to stay, you know, so long that the federal government would forgive my loans. That was my strategy.
It didn't quite work out, but
no,
I'll tell you,
I missed it by a few years.
You know, for our listeners who, you know, don't have a visual on this right now, David's arms are extended and he's clapping them together in alligator fashion for that's the Florida Gator symbol there for cheering on all sports teams from the University of Florida. The great Emmett Smith is a fellow graduate from University of Florida. So David's in good company. And among the company he keeps is investors in the senior housing sector, which KA Real Estate is one of them. What is the current headline, David, regarding senior housing in the United States?
The current headline in the sector right now is a massive recovery from the pandemic. Obviously, no one can underwrite, you know, a global pandemic. And, you know, for KA Real Estate and our senior housing team, you know, we're not just a private equity firm. We are very much an owner operator business where, you know, we're involved. And so when we think about, you know, where we are today versus where we were in spring of 2020, when we were ordering massive amounts of, you know, PPE and testing kits that we would then distribute to our partners in our properties, that was, you know, we were like basically an Amazon fulfillment center for our senior housing properties. So that was the low, right? We were figuring out, holy cow, this is, you know, what is happening here? We need to take care of our residents. And so we sprang into action and our team did an amazing job between us and our partners in keeping our residents safe. And so when we look back at where we were to where we are now, and to just give you a magnitude, you know, we're up, you know, 1500 basis points from our low in terms of occupancy. Our stabilized portfolio is 92% occupied. And when I say stabilized, I mean, you know, your non-development lease-up projects.
Well, what is the occupancy rate, though, David, that you need, not you, everybody in the industry really needs to hit for it to be, to make sure you're not in the red? What is that occupancy percentage?
So it's a great question. The thing with seniors is it's the opposite of multifamily, because you have such a huge range of acuity. So for example, you know, we're heavy and it's very intentional for us to be mostly independent living with some AL memory care, particularly on these continuum care facilities. So our prototype is, you know, independent living is 55 to 65%, and then AL memory care being the balance, all in one campus, so we can provide the continuum for for our residents, and we play at the upper end of the business, you know, upper middle market to high end of the business, because that's where rent elasticity is. So when you have, you know, some margin pressure from costs, labor, food, et cetera, our tenants can pay the increased rents over time. So that's the business that we play in. So our margins, so our break evens are much lower than, let's say, you know, your Brook, I'm just picking on Brookdale just because they do the country, frankly, a huge service, because they're providing the middle and the lower middle market a place to live. And frankly, which is a separate conversation, but the Brookdales of the world are mission critical to our senior housing ecosystem. But their occupancy levels are much higher, right? Because their tenants are, you know, they're fixed income, they can't afford their private pay, but they cannot afford what our tenants in the upper middle to high end of the market can afford. So it's vastly different. And
but that middle market and higher, David, is that you're still dependent on some Medicaid. I mean, the government.
We're not.
You're
our
not.
Business,
okay. You're staying out of that category.
Yeah, we intentionally built our business that we are at the higher end private pay, you know, folks that, you know, have been successful, or their adult children, fortunately, can pay the rent at our properties. So we play in a very, you know, segmented part of the market for this very reason. You know, we try to attack the most recession resistant part of all of our sectors. Now, that being said, when we look at it from a market participant, you know, we feel, you know, an obligation from an intellectual perspective and from a resource building perspective to help, you know, with Freddie Fannie, with local government, state government, and to help bring people to the table to help really the lower middle market. Now we, you know, we chatted, you know, we're pretty close with Fannie and Freddie just because we're a big borrower of theirs. And it's, you know, we haven't come out with any kind of collective, you know, initiatives, but there's been early conversation. How are we going to help the lower to middle market? Because that's really where there's most stress in the system.
So
I just want to add one more thing, Mike. Sure. Sorry, I just want to add one more thing, because it's an interesting point. You know, the federal government, you know, doled out, you know, trillions of dollars during the pandemic, and they left out AL memory care. Now, there was some, you know, dollars delivered, but not nearly enough to help those operators and owners to get through the pandemic, come out where they needed to come out with all the deficit funding as a result of not being able to move people in, and the increased cost structure as a result of the pandemic. So, you know, there's a lot of work to do from a policy perspective to get the state, local, and federal government to start chipping in.
Now, I've heard senior housing executives say that we learned a lot of lessons from the pandemic and we've made the necessary adjustments. What do you know about that? What are the lessons that were learned? Not at KA necessarily, but the industry at large, because there's a lot of investors who invest in a lot of different places within senior housing, and they're interested in knowing, you know, what did you learn and how are we protected against future pandemics, especially since we are being told that we're going to see more of this and people travel so quickly and so from every corner of the earth these days, that if something does break out with any kind of time lag before it expresses itself in the human system, it's everywhere before you even know it's a problem.
No question. So first and foremost, the protocols that were put in place and refined for any kind of, you know, hyper contagious, you know, call it disease for lack of a better word, infections, that has been refined significantly. So from PPE, like, so wearing masks, it's just so many of these lessons learned. So I actually spent a fair amount of time at the Mayo. I do my executive health workup at the Mayo up in Rochester. And what they found was that...
That's Rochester, Minnesota, not Rochester, New York.
Yeah, Rochester, Minnesota. That's right. That's where the Mayo is headquartered.
Just tipping my hat to the Minnesotans there.
Oh yeah, they know. So in any event, so what I learned from them is that all transmittable disease dropped by over 90% by doing two things. One, you know, wearing the mask, and two, washing your hands and all the type of like all the prep stuff that you're supposed to do, right? And also some of the sanitization work that they did in the hospital. And so that is proven to work. And you're going to see that if any kind of infections that come up, that will be put in place way ahead of time, right? And they're going to be controlling the environment. So I think from a transmission perspective, the properties have figured it out. They figured out how to care for residents, you know, with quasi, I wouldn't say isolation, but to make sure that there's safe distancing. And so those kind of protocols and, you know, the practice that we all went through, the, you know, sort of the muscle memory will be way more, you know, reactive when this happens in some, you know, level again.
What do U.S. demographics tell us about the future of senior housing?
Well, there's this thing in our business that for 10 plus years, we've been talking about this silver tsunami, right? Because demographic data is pretty clear. But that was like the Doppler 3 radar. That was like, okay, the tsunami's coming, it's offshore, and it's coming. Hey, it's coming. But that tsunami is now hitting shore. And so finally, it's three. Yeah, it's here. And it's 3x the growth rate of the last 10 for the next 10. And oh, by the way, Mike, the supply to services demand that's just based on demographics is incapable of meeting the demand. And by the way, the last thing I use, by the way, a little too much, it's part of my, it's just part of my language. So you just have to bear with me. But the supply pipelines since the pandemic and over the next 3 to 5 years are at historic lows. For a developer to build a project right now, not only do you need construction costs to come down, but you need financing both from equity and debt. And that is very difficult at the moment, as we know of the illiquidity in the capital markets. So from an owner's perspective, the next 10 years will be the best years in senior housing is from my personal career and for many of our careers, just because of the pure supply-demand fundamentals in the business.
Interesting. So let's talk about that silver tsunami for a minute. It has been delayed. I mean, just crashing to shore now, but it's been delayed by a couple of factors. One, yeah, I mean, check me on this. This is my understanding. Seniors are living longer and they're physically and mentally replete later in life. And secondly, senior citizens are reticent to give up their homes and their independence. So to begin with, does that check out with you? And secondly, I'm quite sure about number two, the, you know, senior citizens being reticent to give up their homes and their independence. So regarding that, what kind of inducements do senior living facilities have to offer that get seniors to show up and look at the place? I know a lot of kids will take their parents and say, let's just go look. And they look at it and say, hey, this isn't so bad. This is looking pretty good. And I see a lot of people who looks like me and they're sitting down and playing cards and maybe doing some other fun stuff. What about people living longer and better, and this whole idea that why should I give up my independence? And I mean, that's a big deal for people.
So let me answer the second one first, because these are sort of lessons that we learn or things that we learn during the different events that we experience. And so during the pandemic, one of the question marks was, hey, you know, are people going to come here? You know, is this a place that, you know, adult children can be comfortable sending their parents, and similarly, are residents going to want to come to where, you know, the transmission of diseases could be perceived to be more. Well, what we found out, and this is pretty well documented, is that the main cause of acuity increases was not, you know, the pandemic. It was isolation. It was the lack of social interaction. And so adult children and residents and potential residents are saying, hey, this was awful, and I don't want that to happen again, right? So they're putting their, we saw a surge of people coming in when our doors were able to be open, because when we do these intakes, we ask a bunch of questions on, you know, reasons for coming and all that kind of stuff. And so we've seen an influx of residents because they want to live well. They want lifestyle. They want interaction. They want to have multiple dining options, right? And the adult children, of course, they feel much more comfortable having them there than certainly by themselves, and even more in their own homes, right? Living with their adult children. So we actually have seen an uptick in the adoption rates for seniors making that decision of coming into our, and again, this is speaking from Kane view only, is that our places are like country clubs. They're like four seats. These are really nice. And so when you come here, you're like, wow, this is, I see myself here. I'm okay giving up my home. So we think that trend's going to continue because of what was experienced during COVID and the fear of being isolated again.
Give us a few things that they come into a senior living center, a higher end one, like what KA does. What are some of the activities that are really popular there that the seniors find to be a lot of fun?
So, like you said before, you know, seniors are more active than they were before. And also this generation of seniors is more discerning. And if you look at their discretionary spending, they spend a tremendous amount on wellness. And so we've enhanced our wellness programs from food and nutrition to our fitness, our fitness programs, anywhere from yoga, Tai Chi, those sorts of things. A lot of group fitness, of course. And then, you know, our arts program, both mature learning, so extended learning. We have, you know, not only curriculum internally, but we bring in speaker series. We tend to partner with local universities. For example, we have a project in Westwood, California, across the street from UCLA. So we have a partnership with UCLA to provide continued learning audit opportunities for our residents. So they can go over to the university for free. We bring speakers in, those sorts of things. We have the same thing with the University of Arizona and our properties in Tucson. So when you come to our property, it's not just a bed and a meal. You come to our properties and you have this suite of activities and lifestyle and wellness and learning that is truly a life enhancer, and the longevity opportunity at our properties is material. And that's what our residents see, and that's what our adult children see as well.
So compare the U.S. model with models in other countries, like say Japan or Germany. I think both of those countries are quite good with senior living care, senior living facilities, or maybe there's some other countries you'd like to cite. Have we learned some things from our counterparts in Japan and Germany and other countries that have been integrated into the U.S. model? Or do you consider the U.S. model to be the kind of creme de la creme of senior housing and living?
So global senior housing in general has been oriented for care. Before there's a need for care, they live on their own or they live with their adult children, which culturally in India and in Asia, that happens, right? And it's more oriented around care. the U.S., because of one, the maturity of our markets here, particularly real estate, the fact that you have folks like us and others who've learned from other sectors like hospitality and multifamily, that we've created senior housing as a lifestyle choice. And then obviously the advent of adult, this adult, active adult concept, which is basically like multifamily for seniors. So we have a much different orientation that moving from care to lifestyle, particularly at the upper middle market, to higher end of the market. And on the middle market, the active adult is a affordable option to come in, live with your peers, have some programming, et cetera. So we at Kayne Anderson, we're focused on lifestyle. We're focused on margin, right? So we're not in the business for 10, 15% margin. The more care you provide, the harder it is to get to the 40 to 50% margins. And so we have an orientation to stay away from high levels of care, care-oriented properties, and more focus on lifestyle and wellness.
Tell us something surprising or something that we don't know regarding senior living centers.
Well,
maybe
I would
something
say
you drop in your presentations that kind of surprise your audience or delight them.
Well, I think we still have this preconceived imagery that senior housing is old people in wheelchairs drooling. And I say that because that is really what still many people think, is that it's a place that you go when you have nowhere else to go. And that is entirely opposite of what we do. Now, of course, you do have you folks in the spectrum that need that kind of care. And that is a place for, you know, for seniors in the spectrum of care. But the lion's share is not. And frankly, the last 10 years, and more recently, the last 5 to 7, it's more on this lifestyle wellness. So I think that preconceived notion is something that is still very much ingrained in particularly our country. And when you bring up senior housing, what is it? And that the answer to what it is very different than what people think.
Now, let me ask you, there are investors who are very wary of the hotel sector for this reason. They say it's really an operating business. It's people intensive. It's customer service intensive. It's not really about the property, strictly speaking. It's about personnel and their management of the property. And that can be really difficult. It's unpredictable. And today, it's difficult to find employees to fill positions in any line of work. Now, couldn't the same be said for senior housing? What about that factor? It's like, it's a great property, beautiful development, but it's all about the execution of the people who are hired from the management standpoint right down to the rank and file employee who's bringing meals to people, handing them their medication, whatever the case might be.
You're exactly right. It is a hands-on business, for sure. And the opportunity is to really distinguish, you know, as an owner and an operator, you know, ourselves from others. And we only partner with 5 to 7 operators for that very reason. We only are at the top end of the market, and we're incredibly involved in all those sorts of things, the hiring of our senior people at our properties, you know, the all the delivery of wellness and lifestyle. We're part of that conversation to make sure that we're utilizing best practices that we're learning from one property and partner and applying it to others. But also, it's what I was saying before, Mike. It's for us, we want to be a majority of independent living with the supportive services and units for memory care and assisted living, because we know that it's an important part of the delivery model, particularly to reduce the anxiety for seniors to come into an independent living facility and knowing, well, wait, if I come in as a couple in a 2-bedroom, what if my wife or my husband or my partner needs more levels of care, right? That is a stressful moment. And so we want to provide that solution and reduce that anxiety when that conversation happens. So that's our model. And as a result of that model, yes, we do have exposure, of course, to the care and to employees, but it is a smaller part of our portfolio, very intentionally, for all the things that you shared. And so I think from when we think about, you know, the next 10, 15, 20 years and where we want to play in what we're doing now and probably, you know, lean more to the lower acuity than the higher acuity.
Now, we use senior housing or living centers as an all-encompassing term, but there are different segments to this. Different senior populations have different needs. There's memory care, there's assisted living, there's nursing, there's independent living. Do you play in all those areas or not? And as you look forward, which segment of senior housing is poised to do best, if you could make such a prediction?
So as I mentioned, we're you know, heavy independent living with some AL memory care. We're 60-65% independent living, the balance being AL memory care to support AL or IL. That's our business model. And so we believe that business model will continue to perform very well over the next several years, many years. Now, I say that, but because of this tsunami actually hitting the shore, you know, there's going to be way too much demand, right? Without nearly enough supply to support the seniors that need and want to be in the senior housing spectrum. I think the question, Mike, ultimately is, in the middle to lower middle market, how do we create a model where both the tenants can afford to pay and the owners can have a reasonable margin in their business? That, to me, is the ultimate question that will need to be solved over the next 30 years.
So looking forward, if you were to look at senior housing in 10 or 20 years, what do you see in terms of innovations? I don't know if there are some things on the horizon that have not landed yet. What do you see in terms of innovation and the overall performance of the senior housing sector, say in 10 or 20 years, if your sight goes that far out, what would you say?
Well, certainly technology is being utilized today, and it will be a critical part of the delivery model going forward. So for example, when you have higher levels of care and you know, the vigilance of, hey, how's Betty doing in her room? Well, there's currently technology to know is where Betty is without violating privacy. Is Betty, where the heat, you know, using like heat mappings in a room, and they're using, you know, different types of sensors to know where Betty is, not just the old school call, like, okay, I'm falling, I can't get up. You know, it's way more sophisticated than that now, Mike. Mm-hmm. But it's going to get even more sophisticated than that. And using AI to help residents maximize their wellness from a nutrition perspective, from overall activity, movement, right? Blood flow, cognition, all these things that we deal with today, we're going to have this hyper-concentrated group of people in these facilities that could receive and benefit from the technology. So it is, if you think about it, there's nothing else like it where you have the similar age people in concentrated areas to deliver and test and tinker with the technology and AI that is here and coming. But I still go back to, Mike, not whether it'll be technology and whether there's going to be, you know, artificial intelligence to really help us maximize the elderly lifestyle and longevity. The question is, outside of what we focus on in the upper middle to high end of the market, how can we make it attainable, affordable for the folks in the lower middle market? And that is, to me, the question and the objective that not only should we have as an industry, but we should have from, you know, a societal objective. And I think we're not quite there because not many people are thinking about it. So, and I'm not trying to, you know, pound the drum there, but when I look forward and I'm being fully honest, we're busy. Our business is going to be just fine. Our business is going to do really well, which is good for our investors, which is our, which frankly, there are a lot of pensioners, you know, in our investors are heavily concentrated with pensioners. So we are doing them the job that they want us to do. But there's another part of the world that we will not invest in, but that needs support. And I think we got to figure that out.
You know, just to get back to artificial intelligence for a moment, we had a purveyor of artificial intelligence. He had a company. He developed artificial intelligence systems for senior housing. He was on the program 3-4 years ago, and he was talking about how sophisticated these systems are, that they can actually discern from a senior a tenant's expression whether they might be having a stroke or whether they're confused. To go quite sophisticated, and this is before, of course, AI has broken out in such a big way. It's only getting better. It's only getting better. So that's quite. And also, robotics is a big deal these days, David. I know in Japan, a robot is. We have a long way to go there, but they're basic in terms of just providing a basic level of attention and care. They're basically inexhaustible, where a human being having to do repetitive tasks, that's tough. Are robotics, do you see robotics becoming part of the equation here at any time soon? Obviously, it's not going to handle everything, but there are, as I say, repetitive tasks that can be pretty grinding for a human being that a robot has no qualms about.
I think the possibilities are endless to use technology, robotics, AI, and other different technology to care and extend quality life for our population. For sure. I think it's gonna take some time for it to develop to where it's readily used. Think about it this way. We as our global ecosystem, we have a fertility rate that continues to drop. So the replacement rate, as they call it, you know, went from 2.7 children per family down to 2.1 children per family. That is the replacement rate. So if you actually play this out, there is no way that we're going to have enough children born to take care of the people getting older. And so AI, robotics, technology, it is going to be an imperative for all of us to figure that out and implement it, or else we're going to have some real challenges ahead. Now, I'm playing out, you know, longer term, basically, you know, the second half of this century, but it's still within many of our lifetimes.
It's a major issue. It's a major issue in terms of economic development and so on. It's happening in Italy. It's happening in Japan. It goes on. And in Singapore, fertility rate is down to 1.0.
And
isn't it? And this is after they did a major push to get people to have children. But there's a lot of people in the world. It's an overpopulated world, a lot of people say. And some people are kind of cheering this on while others are fretful about how we're going to afford to take care of the elderly as well as have people there to take care of them. It's an issue that's going to, obviously technology will play a role. We'll see just how much of a role. My guest has been David Selznick. He is a Florida Gator and a partner and chief investment officer at KA Real Estate. They invest in alternative types of real estate, including senior housing, naturally. David, thank you for taking the time and giving us some perspective on the senior housing market.
My pleasure, Mike.